Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Wonder who is this?
Long lost bro, get to squeeze his stinking sister to death or what?
She recast Pietro?
Who's a popsicle?
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney Plus. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU Diaries. I am your host, Blake Larson, and today we are talking about WandaVision, episode 105, on a very special episode. And I have to say, I can't believe they did it. They just went out and said, screw it. Screw it. We're throwing all the papers up in the air. All inhibitions are out the door. We're just going with it, man. They reintroduced Pietro. And they did it in a big way. A very big way. Something that we will definitely get into in this episode. We are going to talk about that in the best way possible. Trust me, we will break down every meaning and every reason why Pietro was back. And also, for those nerds out there that don't understand how big of a deal this is, it's a big deal, yes, because Pietro, the dead brother, has returned, but because it is not played by the same Pietro, and that opens up a world, a massive world of opportunity for the MCU. And we will explain that in a little bit. But before we do, of course, I want to remind you, thank you first for coming back and listening to this and enjoying every episode of WandaVision with me and listening to the MCU Diaries. And trust me, there are plenty of you out there. I see these numbers every day, and it is a wild subscribe rate. So thank you so much. Wanted to remind you that you can go to maryandblake.com to check out all the great podcasts that I do along with my wife, Mary. I am hoping to maybe have her join me on one of these episodes, maybe possibly for the finale. We shall see. But go to maryandblake.com, check out all the great podcasts, and of course, go to the very special Mary and Blake Facebook group where you get a chance to talk and nerd out with all the other nerds that have joined our community together, and there are a lot of you. Talking about all the great things that you all love to death. And it's a great place of warmth and community. You do not want to miss that out or miss out on that. Yeah, there you go, Blake. Miss out on that. You don't want to miss out on that community where you can just talk about the things that you love and talk about them to great detail, much like how we do on this podcast, talking about the MCU. But for now, let's get into the show, shall we? Episode 105 on a very special episode is directed by Matt Shakman, as always, and actually has two writers, or at least have written by credits. The first one is Peter Cameron. He has written a bunch of different shows starting back in 2009, whether it is movies from that are called Flight from Hell or Lost in the Pacific. He also has a couple of credits for TV series called Delusion and Donna's Inferno. And one of the most latest credits that he has is from Carnival Row. If you remember that series, I think it was on TBS or was it TNT? One of the two. Starring Orlando Bloom, if you remember all that. And Peter is an executive story editor for most of these credits that he has here. Even on WandaVision, I think this is the... Oh, no, he has two written by credits for this episode on a very special episode, and also the next episode, all new Halloween Spooktacular, which is episode 6. And the other writer is Mackenzie Dore, and this is her third credit. Beginning back in 2017, she started on The Mindy Project, continued on with Lock and Key, and obviously WandaVision. She, too, is serving as an executive story editor. If you want to hear more about what an executive story editor is and does, go back to the last episode where we break that down pretty specifically. Just as a basic summation, the executive story editor is someone who has jumped up from being a PA or just a staff writer. They've also jumped up from being just a story editor. They've been in the business now for probably 3-4 years, and the executive story editor is the next level. It's the one that is right before becoming a credited writer. But also, it's still just not there quite yet. They got about another year or two to go before they become an accredited writer or accredited producer on any particular shows. But we are talking about 105 on a very special episode, and this one goes full 80s. We are in the Full House realm here, ladies and gents, in all of the metatextual conversation that happens with Elizabeth Olsen, her being related to the Olsen twins, who were the budding young stars of Full House, and I love it. But also on top of this, and the fun aspect of it, is we are asked, or we are forced to ask ourselves, rather, who the real villain is here, and what is the cost of lies? What is the cost of lies for Wanda and everything that has happened in WandaVision? We'll get there in a second. And I really want to get there. I really want to talk about this episode and everything that it entails a lot. I promise we will get to the what the heart really lies here is. But there is something that we have to do first. Before we expect and explore the real villain of this three-act drama, we have to acknowledge the giant elephant in the room. Yes, we mentioned at the top of this episode, Pietro, he's back for all of you Harry Potter nerds out there. But as I said, it's not the Pietro we all know and love from Avengers Age of Ultron, who was played by Aaron Taylor Johnson. No. It is Peter / Quicksilver from the X-Men universe as played by Evan Peters. Somewhere in the world, in the multiverse of our world, there's a 10-year-old version of myself just weeping in a corner about how beautiful this all really is. And for you uninitiated out there, for you people who are just not MCU or Marvel movie dorks, what you just witnessed and what you just heard in the final 60 seconds of this episode at the top of our podcast here is a big deal. It's a really big fracking deal. And let's just go into it. Why is Pietro so important? Why is this such a big deal? Well, aside from the fact that Pietro is Wanda's brother, who died many years ago, as we talked about in the MCU during Avengers Age of Ultron, and is one of the reasons why that Wanda has such a trauma and grief-filled existence, Pietro returning into the fold raises two major questions. The first, what is the, quote, in-story explanation? And consequently, what are the ethical ramifications for our characters because of the choice to bring back Pietro? That's our first question. The second big question is, what does Evan Peters Pietro mean for the MCU writ large? How does this come to be? And are we going to see more characters injected into the MCU that were not originally in the mix? So let's first address the second question to get some context to what we're talking about. In other words, what is Evan Peters, who played Peter in or Quicksilver in the X-Men universe, what is he doing in the MCU, and what does it mean going forward for the MCU? Here is the extraordinarily basic business explanation on how Evan Peters was able to jump from the X-Men universe into the MCU or the Marvel universe, like the Disney Marvel Studios produced MCU. It boils down to this. Disney recently purchased 20th Century Fox Studios. I know that you're going to get a popsicle headache for a little bit, but let me help. As such, Disney, who owns the MCU, now owns the rights to all of the X-Men characters or mutants that were once owned by 20th Century Fox, of which Evan Peters Quicksilver was a part. Yes, I know, popsicle headache. Just keep going with me. How did all this happen? Why is there a separation between mutants and MCU and 20th Century Fox? I'll tell you. Let's take a quick jaunt in the DeLorean, all right? Starting in 2000 with Bryan Singer's X-Men, you know, the one with Hugh Jackman and all those guys and gals, 20th Century Fox Studios started to produce all the current iterations of the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, Deadpool, and all of the X-Men adjacent films like the recent released New Mutants. So from 2000 to 2019, the X-Men universe was separate from that of the Disney-owned Marvel Studios MCU, which began with 2008's Iron Man. And these two studios did not cooperate with each other. So why was there separation to begin with? Why couldn't they all just play together? Well, it's actually pretty simple. In other words, why did these two studios have rights to all these different characters, some of which were part of the MCU, some of which were part of Fox, and so on? Why is there a difference? Well, Marvel, the company, back in 1993 was financially strapped. So they actually sold the movie rights of the X-Men and the Fantastic Four to 20th Century Fox. By the way, these were their most popular characters. And they did it in an effort to alleviate their debts. In other words, if the character was considered a mutant, they were sold to 20th Century Fox. At the same time, Marvel actually also ceded the rights to Spider-Man and all the Spidey-adjacent characters like Morbius and Venom and everything else to Sony Pictures in a separate deal from 20th Century Fox. So they took their most famous characters, Marvel did, and they sold the rights. One set of characters to 20th Century Fox and one set of characters who were Spider-Man-focused to Sony Pictures at the same time in 1993. So while these deals were a big financial score for Marvel at the time, like I said, they managed to pawn off all of their major characters who helped drive the Marvel franchise to what it became in the comics. So if they ever wanted to produce their own films with these characters, they couldn't do so because they were owned by different movie studios. But that's if they ever intended on making their own films. Of course, they had no intention at the time of making their own films because they weren't a movie production company. So it wasn't all that much of a coup. What did it matter? They got all the money, right? But then all of a sudden, things changed. And they decided, it's time to make our own films. And this is when Disney and Marvel Studios comes together and they change the game. And this is when we also have Kevin Feige, who is the head honcho of Marvel Studios. He is the guy who is directing all of it. Not directing, but he is the one guiding the ship. He and some writers and some directors are the, like John Favreau and all those guys, they are the guiding light. And Kevin Feige is in charge of Marvel Studios. Well, back in the mid-2000s, after the major successes of Chris Nolan's Batman Begins and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy and Singer's X-Men films that we talked about earlier, he was tasked to take advantage of the superhero momentum and start making Marvel-produced films with their lesser-known characters, ones that they hadn't sold off or got the rights back to. And you know all these characters. The lesser-known characters, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, the Hulk, Hawkeye, Black Widow, you know, no big deal. Yada, yada, yada. The Avengers become the highest-grossing film of all time. Yada, yada, yada. Marvel Studios becomes a juggernaut in Hollywood, and the rest is history. Mind you, this was all happening. All this stuff with Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios, this was all happening while Fox was doing their own thing to varying degrees of downright genius. And I'm looking at you, Logan, and total, utter, embarrassing failure. I'm looking at you, Fanforstic, the latest iteration of Fantastic Four. And they were doing these with characters like Magneto and Professor X, Wolverine, and yes, even Quicksilver / Peter Maximoff. But as we just noted, Pietro Maximoff, as played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, was happening at the same time as Evan Peters' Peter Maximoff / Quicksilver. They were both being in the movies at the same time. How is this possible? If Fox owned the rights to Quicksilver because he was a mutant, how could he, Quicksilver or Pietro, appear in X-Men films and Avengers Age of Ultron at the same time? Well, that's when things get a little gray for Pietro and Wanda, the Maximoff twins. And essentially, it boils down to what's called shared rights. In other words, the MCU could not acknowledge the presence of mutants in their world, as, again, the word mutant was a 20th century Fox property at the time. But they could, the MCU, refer to metahumans. And the workaround for all of this was that Fox used the names Quicksilver and Peter and referenced the traditional Marvel origins of Peter and his sister Wanda, being the children of Magneto. In turn, Marvel Studios, led by Kevin Feige, they actually changed the origin story for Wanda and Pietro for their own movies, making them of Eastern European descent. And they also changed how their powers came to be. They weren't mutants, necessarily. Their powers came from the Mind Stone, as, again, it was cataloged in Avengers Age of Ultron. Another thing, too, is that they never, ever, 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 never mentioned the names Quicksilver or Scarlet Witch in the MCU, which were technically the names owned by Fox. So even though we have Wanda and Pietro, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, and even though they were the same characters, the way that they were employed by these studios, they had different backgrounds, different names, and technically different origin stories, essentially making them usable for both studios. This all changed, however, once Disney purchased 20th Century Fox Studios in 2019. And because of Disney's acquisition, Disney and the MCU, they now have the rights to use the word mutant. And they have the rights to use all of the X-Men characters, as well as their established origin stories in the MCU films and TV shows. The big question, though, was this. How would the MCU organically incorporate these characters? And as such, do they acknowledge Fox's pre-established history, even though the MCU, who loves complete control over their stories and their character arcs, which, by the way, I totally, totally co-sign, do they acknowledge this pre-established history, even though the MCU did not have any creative say in those characters for basically 20 years? Would it be done, and how could it be done? And we're seeing it right now, ladies and gents. It's WandaVision. So let's talk about the in story. Now that we have the business side of it all in the studios and you have all the players and how it all went down, let's talk about WandaVision itself and how the story of WandaVision is exploring Evan Peters Pietro. This is kind of hard for right now, for this very instant, because Pietro's introduction lasts no more than 60 seconds without any explanation whatsoever. We have to gather as much information about this encounter as possible from what little information WandaVision gives us. Essentially, the doorbell interrupts the conversation between Vision and Wanda when they're talking about control and her control over the town. Wanda answers the door. Evan Peters Pietro is in the doorway. Wanda somehow recognizes him a little bit. And Evan Peters, in very much the fashion of Fox's Quicksilver, asks who the Popsicle is. That's it. End of episode. Done. Boom. Now, for someone who doesn't keep up with all the business dealings that we talked about earlier, or their prior history of the characters in the comics, I get it. This is a lot to take in. That's if you're trying to understand it. If you're just going along for the ride, maybe they're just going with Dr. Darcy's explanation that Wanda just simply recast Pietro in her, quote, show. And there's a benefit. There's a beauty to having that kind of ignorance. But there's also a beauty, an exquisite beauty, of having the knowledge of the business dealings, how this is possible, and why this reveal of Evan Peters is so big. I mean, either way, in addition to the business mechanics that needed to happen to produce this kind of scene, which, again, we already talked about, there is also here an implication of where the story is going for WandaVision. But not only just WandaVision, the MCU on the whole. Major story ramifications are abound in the unexpected scene shared between Wanda and the new Pietro. Implicit in this meeting is that Wanda has apparently torn a slice into reality, allowing people from other universes, alternative realities, or adjacent dimensions access into the MCU universe. In other words, there are multiple universes and dimensions with all of our characters existing at the same time. That's why we call it the multiverse. These universes and these dimensions don't normally interact. They stay to their own place. But by using the power to manipulate Westview and thereby incite the events of WandaVision, Wanda has potentially ripped a hole in the time-space continuum, allowing the interaction between Fox's Evan Peters Quicksilver and Wanda, who exists solely in the MCU. This is why we see Peter's version of Pietro instead of the established MCU version as played by Aaron Taylor Johnson. And while this has been a widely used trope, the multiverse, throughout science fiction, and yes, even some recent X-Men films like Days of Future Past, or even some future DCEU films like the upcoming Flash movie, which is based on Flashpoint, that also introduces multiple timelines and multiverses, it's actually a very real theory in this world. You can actually read about all the possibilities of multiple dimensions and multiverses as it relates to string theory. Go Google string theory. It will bake your noodle. And due to the fact that Peter's Pietro exists now in the MCU, the MCU is therefore acknowledging the past history of the X-Men films as a valid but separate part of the MCU. Everything you watched with Ian McKellen's Michael Fassbender's Magneto, or Patrick Stewart's James McAvoy's Professor X, for those past 20 years, everything you saw, it all happened. It's all true. It's just a separate leg of the MCU that exists in its own dimension of the MCU. But the major crossover point here between these two realities begins, apparently, with the relationship shared between Pietro and Wanda. Having this seminal event, this massive, massive event, rooted in the very fabric of this small relationship that has defined Wanda is a masterstroke of excellence. Yes, these colliding worlds are important for the plot of the MCU, but this major event will now potentially be informed and defined by the tragic and inevitable fall of Wanda, Vision, and now the new Pietro. This choice drastically alters the story of what we're watching, but it also transforms our characters on a very basic character level from being the foundational pillars we once knew to something that is wholly different and wholly opposite. As we discussed in our first episode of the MCU Diaries, there is actually a bevy of evidence to suggest that WandaVision is the MCU precursor to a major plotline of Marvel, that being the House of M. We have talked about it a lot. Essentially, it is when Wanda loses her mind as well as control over her powers and reshapes reality as we know it. This possibility is only further emphasized by the well-known fact that the next Doctor Strange film starring Benedict Cumberbatch, of which Wanda plays a major role, by the way, that film is entitled The Multiverse of Madness, which, for those keeping score at home, looks like it's finding its footing with the multiple universes, or the multiverses, if you will, colliding here with Evan Peters' Pietro and Elizabeth Olsen's Wanda sharing a hug on what seems like the set of Full House. Woo! Yes. Love it, love it, love it. So now we got all over all of that. We got over the multiverses, the business dealings, how this is important, why Evan Peters' Pietro is important. Let's get to what we talked about initially. Who is the real villain of this story? It, so far, looks like it's Wanda. Yeah, Wanda. What are the ethical ramifications of Pietro's inclusion in this episode? Wanda is in full control of everything that is happening in Westview. Whether it is reanimating her very dead husband, changing the look and feel of Westview and her house for every single, quote, episode, or in this case, when Agnes asks Wanda at the beginning of the episode if she wants me to do that take again, you want me to do that? After a minor discrepancy with Vision. Wanda's decisions shape the reality of the town surrounding her, despite her retort that she is not capable of making people go to their dentist appointment on time or if people mow their grass. No, no, no. She has to be in control because she's the one who created this. Maybe she didn't expect Pietro to arrive and that is why she is surprised, but maybe that's also why she has a recognition of him because it's part of her. She manifested it. The theory of Wanda's total control is further validated, by the way, by Vision's experience with his co-worker, Norm. Vision touches Norm's temples with his special powers, whatever the magic Vision powers are, and he causes an awakening. You have to stop her, says this poor guy with panic, just utter panic in his eyes. She's in my head, just make her stop. Norm continues before Vision touches his temples with, again, Vision magic, and he returns him to his formerly enslaved sitcom twist. This is huge, massive for our story. Norm, like Darcy and Jimmy Woo in the previous episode, is the audience surrogate for the entire Westview community. Implicit in his desperate plea to Vision is that not only are the Westview residents real people, but they are actively aware of Wanda's control and are being tortured by it, and most importantly, want to be freed of it, despite the fact that they're all involuntarily doing her bidding when they are, for the lack of a better term, bewitched. To that end, we also learn that it's not just a random ability that empowers Wanda. Monica says of her experience in Westview to Tyler at the beginning of the episode, there was this feeling keeping me down, this hopeless feeling, like drowning. It was grief. Again, rooting this immense power and plot-altering details in the vast emotion of our characters, providing actual characterization and reasoning for what the plot is maintaining. Characters always drive plot. Plot should never, ever, 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 ever drive characters. Shouldn't happen. Also implicit in Monica's feeling is that not only was Monica aware of Wanda's control like Norm, but that her brief interlude of awareness when she talked about Ultron and Pietro was independent of Wanda's control. Like we posited in episode 3, Wanda may have briefly lost her grip on the town when she was singing the Sokovian lullaby to her children and thereby allowed a sense of actual reality to seep back not only in Monica, but maybe possibly in back into the rest of the residents of Westview. And if you want to go down this road even further, the key to defeating Wanda and putting an end to the events of Westview might be woven into this very brief interlude. The goal should be to distract Wanda, loosen her grip on the town, and possibly, possibly strike when she is the most vulnerable as she confronts her grief, as grief appears to be the thesis and antithesis of Wanda's control over Westview. Ultimately, this town of Westview is an active response to Wanda's grief over Vision's death, and quite possibly now, Pietro's death too. So what are the moral implications of all this? What are the moral implications of Pietro coming back and the actions that she has that Wanda has undertaken? I mean, we see her stealing corpses, tearing reality to shreds, and enslaving essentially innocent people. This is all ugly work from a character that actually deserves our sympathy and possibly for most of you or some of you, empathy. Here's the question. Can Wanda come back from it all? Can Wanda come back from these actions? Wanda violates the Sokovia Accords by forcing her way into S.W.O.R.D. and stealing Vision's dead body. She is, in fact, an international criminal now, regardless of how bad we may all feel for her. Will the pseudo-connection she retains with Monica at the end of this episode save her from prosecution? Perhaps. Perhaps not. In the end, I doubt S.W.O.R.D. or Monica or any federal group therein will have anything to do with the resolution of WandaVision. Given how well showrunner Jack Schaefer and director Matt Shakman have framed this story around the interpersonal relationship between Wanda and Vision, my sense is that the finale will have to revolve around the conflict that is certainly barreling down the tracks between Wanda and Vision. Now I come back to the initial question. First question in the title of this episode necessarily, which is, what is the cost of all of this? What is the cost of lies? I often think about the show Chernobyl on HBO, which was written by Craig Mazin. I bring this up because Chernobyl was, the, in my eyes, the perfect miniseries. The direction was incredible. The acting was even better, but it was the writing that made it superior. And at the heart of Chernobyl was a single operative question. What is the cost of lies? And in Chernobyl's case, all the lying led to the demise of thousands of people in an unlivable, irradiated plot of land that cannot be inhabited for God knows how many years. For those of you who don't know what Chernobyl is, it was a nuclear power plant that exploded in Russia and killed a whole bunch of people. And there was a great miniseries made about it on HBO. Go do yourself a favor. It came out, I think, last year, right before, or maybe, yeah, a year and a half ago, right before all of this COVID nonsense happened. Go do yourself a favor and watch it. It is mind-bendingly spectacular. And I recall the theme of Chernobyl so easily because what is the cost of lying? I mean, cost of lies? That was the line that was asked by the main character as the first bit of dialogue for the show. That was the first line in the show. It's an effective use and communication of theme in such an efficient manner. right away. We set the table for every scene to follow through to its conclusion. We watch this show with one question in mind. What is the cost of lies? And we see that cost throughout the entire run. I bring this up as it relates to WandaVision because Wanda has violated and defiled her husband's body and the legacy by stealing his body and reanimating him. And for you Harry Potter nerds, she basically uses the Resurrection Stone for her own benefit. And to top it off, she builds a town around her grief. I don't think, however, that her violation is limited to only Vision and the members of that town. Is it possible that she reanimated Pietro? Or if she hasn't reanimated him like Vision, has she forcibly ripped Pietro from his own X-Men university, universe? I mean, what about Pietro's sister, Wanda, in that universe? Or his mother in that universe? Or the students at Professor X's school from that universe? That aside, let's just talk about him in this world. Is he also under Wanda's torturous control while he's at Westview? Did Wanda knowingly bring Pietro to Westview? Or was it by accident? In that vein, did her grief manifest Pietro's presence without her knowledge? Add these violations to the mental enslavement of a town, all in the name of a lie to avoid her grief. The natural question to ask is, what is the cost of Wanda's lies? Wanda may protest to Vision that she is not in control of any of this, but Wanda has also not given us any reason to believe that she is actually telling the truth. The fact that Vision is walking around is proof positive of that. There has to be consequences for that kind of action, and it has to be Vision that either delivers those consequences or allows them to transpire. Perhaps at the end of this episode or at the end of this series, Vision has to kill Wanda or hurt her in a significant way to end the torture that she's imposing on this town. And story-wise, it would be fitting for Vision to resolve this conflict in that manner because it causes real, before it causes real damage to the world, as it was Wanda who had to sacrifice Vision for the sake of keeping the Mind Stone out of Thanos' hands in Avengers Infinity War. By the way, it's not me telling you that it's going to end up this way. The show is. In fact, it's right here in this episode. You can see it. Wanda and Vision in conflict, flying in midair, on their set, ready to duke it out. Before Wanda realizes that they're going down a really bad path and resolves the conflict as best as she can. And granted, those circumstances are not as antagonistic as it may look in the show, but the theme here is present nonetheless. The cost of Wanda's lies are her reality, her love, her brother, her rule of law, her association with the Avengers, and maybe, just maybe, even her children. That could be, and those could be, the cost of Wanda's lies. Now we get to the apropos of nothing for WandaVision episode 105 on a very special episode. Wanda's kids just grow whenever they feel like it. Sick of crying? Time to grow. Want a dog? Time to grow. Notice, too, that Wanda has no control over their growth, and she has to ask them to not age up when the dog dies. She can't stop them. Number two, what the hell is up with Agnes? She's just cool with Wanda's kids aging up right before her eyes. Oh, she just happens to have a doghouse waiting in the wings. Agnes is in on this, and I will bet my very inexpensive and small house on it. Number three, the friendship blossoming between Jimmy, Monica, and Darcy is excellent. And I really, really, really hope, for the sake of the MCU aspect of the show, they keep leaning on that or they lean into it. Number four, Monica's outfit from Westview is an indication that Wanda's magic takes whatever is in the town and rearranges it to fit the narrative Wanda is creating. Once again, more proof for the House of M storyline. Number five, the drone sent by S.W.O.R.D. didn't change because it had tech from the 80s. If that is not the biggest wave of the TV magic wand, then I literally have no idea what TV magic is. It's just so funny for a show like this, who pays such great attention to detail for its characters, but then writes itself into a corner like this and just has to whistle past the graveyard about the logic. It boggles my mind. Number 6, what happens when Vision learns the truth? In the wise words of one John McClane, welcome to the potty, pal. Great job, Darcy. I asked that question 3 episodes ago. Number 7, Darcy designates the bubble surrounding Westview as the Hex, which is surely a reference to Wanda's Hex powers from the comics. Number 8, Monica posits that if they can build a high-tech mobile bunker, they can enter Westview, and that she knows an aerospace engineer who'd be up for it. Please, 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 for the love of God, be Reed Richards, who is also known as Mr. Fantastic, and please, 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 please make John Krasinski Reed Richards. My head would explode. I would just die right then and there. I would just poof, that'd be the end. You wouldn't have any more podcasts left. Wanda says, this is your only warning. Stay out of my home. And she said it in her native Sokovian accent. And then she makes all the agents turn their guns on Director Hayward. Say it with me now. Wanda is a badass. Lastly, Lagos for when you make a mess you didn't mean to. That is the catch line for the commercial this episode. And for those of you who don't remember, Lagos was the place where Wanda messed up a little bit and sent a live bomb into a building full of people by accident in Captain America Civil War, which then leads to the Sokovia Accords, which is really wild that this is all happening all at once. So that is it, ladies and gents. This was a longer episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to it. Let's close it out, shall we? All right, everybody, thank you so much for taking the time again to listen to the MCU Diaries. I promise, if you're listening to this in live time, I'm going to get all of these episodes done before episode 9, the finale of WandaVision, premieres on this coming Friday. If you're listening to this after the fact, just thanks for hanging out, man. Thanks for hanging out, having a good time, talking about WandaVision and leaning into all the nerdiness that goes along with a show like this. Absolutely so cool. And of course, sticking with that nerdiness theme, I would love for you to visit jointhenerdclan.com. that is a special community that helps support an independently produced and owned podcast like this, and an independently produced and owned podcast company like mine for Mary and Blake Media. There's a lot of great things happening at jointhenerdclan.com, whether it is bonus episodes and premium podcasts, and you get free swag, and you get book clubs, and just the access to the great community as it is. Kind of like the Mary and Blake Facebook community, of which nearly all of the members there are members at jointhenerdclan.com. It's just a special place to go and be a part of something that is truly nerdy. You talk about all the things that you love, not just WandaVision or the MCU, but if it's Outlander or anything that is happening in your world that you want to talk about, this is where the nerds go. So thank you for taking the time. I'll see you next episode.